Coming up on the My Ag Life Daily News Report.
Where are the priorities in the state? Where does this board stand up for public trust resources? Cold water, native fish, those are public trust resources. Almonds, alfalfa, cotton grown in the semi-arid desert, those are not public trust resources. Those are a drain on public trust resources.
You'll hear more of that comment in segment four today. We focus on water and climate change discussions in today's show. With updates from the Department of Water Resources, the State Water Board, and the State Board of Food and Agriculture. And that's where we start today. I'm your host, Sabrina Halverson. The California Board of Food and Agriculture held a meeting Tuesday focused on water and climate change. We start with comments on water. California Department of Water Resources Director Carla Nemeth gave a detailed report on water and drought in the state. We go straight to her comments to keep us all informed.
In a word, drought. So it's either back or we are in the middle of a longer drought that was punctuated with a couple of wet years. But either way, we've got some difficult management to be doing. So a quick update on where we are with our hydrology. Last week, the department completed its April 1st snow survey. That's typically the sort of biggest and final of the year. We are going to survey again at the end of the month. And by May 10th is when I believe we have a contractual requirement to solidify our allocation. So April 1st really supported where we were a week ago, which was unfortunately the rare requirement of reducing our allocation. So 2 weeks ago, a couple things happened in response to the dry conditions. One was the Water Board issued a dry conditions letter to about 40,000 water rights holders in the state of California. And that was actually in response to sort of overwhelming feedback we had during the previous drought, which was communicate earlier and more frequently when we're into these dry conditions. A day later, DWR adjusted its state water project allocation from 10% to 5% for our settlement contractors on the Feather. They are down to 50% of their contracted amount. The Bureau of Reclamation did what they call a freeze five to their south of Delta contractors, which is they remained at 5%, but told their water contractors that they can't draw on that supply until June. And that is to solidify whether or not they're going to have the supplies to meet that 5% south of Delta. You all are aware that there's a more of a hierarchy of priority contracts in the reclamation side, unlike the State Water Project. So there are different allocations for other contractors. Right now, at least for a certain category of their supplies, Friant is anticipated to maintain their contracted amounts. I think they call it level one and level two. And then of course the exchange contractors have their full contracted amount south of the Delta, and then their settlement contractors north of the Delta have a different formula. But point being is that it's a very dry year and it's very tight as it relates to water supplies. We are, as of April 1st, we are, snowpack is the third driest on record, hovering at around 50%. Strangely at Phillips Station, that's like this one little spot where we're actually well above average, but by and large, across the Sierra, we have about 100 different monitoring stations and we are third driest on record as it relates to snowpack. We're also experiencing what they're experiencing on the Colorado, which is runoff starting to occur earlier with these warm temperatures. We've had above average temperatures in the neighborhood of 10 to 15 degrees even in the last week. So that means that our snowpack melts sooner. For Oroville, we are actually If you look at the drought maps of California, there's this little band that goes up the Feather watershed. It's catastrophically dry in the Feather. It's just an anomaly. It is drier. The 2020, 2021 is drier than 2014, 2015 in the Feather. Not quite as dry as the drought in the 70s, but pretty darn close. So Oroville is, we are working to keep the lake above 900,000 acre feet. Typically, we like our carryover to be 1.6 million acre feet. We actually made a change based on the last drought. Before 2020, we had a carryover target of 1.3 million acre feet in Oroville. We now have it at 1.6. That 300,000 acre feet is actually saving us this year. I know this is a lot of detail for you all, but I actually think it's pretty interesting and important because the world is changing around us. We are trying to adjust to it with significant proactive decisions. But given the context of climate change, even those changes aren't really enough. So in 2020, DWR added 300,000 acre feet to its carryover in Oroville in the event of a dry 2021. That means in 2020, we met 20% of our allocation exclusively with water supplies from San Luis. We did not send any Oroville down for deliveries. And that, quite frankly, is kind of saving our onions this year and is enabling us to have even a 5% delivery. So to me, it really just doubles down on, you know, how we do our modeling and longer term prep with our forecast informed reservoir operations that really adjust the way we think about longer term water planning and how we protect communities from flood and how we maximize water supply with reoperation of reservoirs. We are working to keep Oroville at 900,000 acre feet. What's important about that is that level enables us to maintain our hydropower production, which we may need again this year for high temperatures. State Water Project and the CVP and Metropolitan and LADWP actually played a pretty important role in securing the energy grid last summer. We want to maintain that ability. We also need to maintain that level of water in the reservoir to deal with temperature in the Feather system. If we don't, what happens is we draw from a lower place in the reservoir and we get one big slug of cold water that we can't manage very well. If we maintain the Hyatt-Thermalito complex, we can kind of met out water that maintains water temperature for a greater period of time. This is helpful in the context of how we balance and manage Shasta for temperature, which of course is also a significant driver. So a lot of complexity. We're working very intensely with the Bureau of Reclamation about how we co-manage all of our systems to do everything that we need to be doing for water supplies, but also for in the event that next year is dry and dealing with some very serious temperature species issues that we have. So just again, another detail that I actually think is pretty important, but is complex, is you may recall that in 2018, we adjusted the coordinated operating agreement, which is how Reclamation and DWR share responsibilities for water quality requirements. That again was a lesson learned from the previous drought, where, you know, if you think original COA was established by a congressional act in 1986, long time ago at the time, responsibilities reflected the fact that Shasta was a much bigger storage facility, and down in the Delta, DWR has bigger pumping operations. And so Shasta took on the lion's share of what we call in-basin requirements, which turn into outflow requirements. And they had about 75% of those requirements in these drier water year types. In 2018, what we did is we adjusted that down to 60% for Shasta and 40% for the State Water Project. And then in wetter water year types, Shasta takes on more of the outflow requirements than the State Water Project. That reflects the fact that the State Water Project, our contractors have invested more in storage south of the Delta. But interestingly, what's happened this year, in an ordinarily dry year, Oroville would have a little bit more room to handle our COA obligation. But in fact, this year, Reclamation is loaning us a little bit of water, meeting some of our COA obligation, keeping us at 900,000 acre feet for all these other important challenges around temperature management and grid support. So I go into all of this detail to express the fact that we have a very strong working relationship with Reclamation. Our eye is on the complexity of all the needs we need to meet. We are exercising flexibility to make sure that, you know, we're preparing for next year should it be dry, and we have an eye on all the functions that our storage facilities play. So tough year, no question. When it comes to drought emergency, I want to point out, you'll all be familiar with Janine Jones. She is our drought point person for DWR. I've talked to Joaquin Esquivel, and the Water Board is also establishing a point person that can help us kind of merge all of these needs that we have to manage. But short of a drought emergency proclamation from the governor, typically a drought emergency at the USDA level is a different threshold. It's a lower bar, if you will, than the Emergency Services Act that the state needs to abide by. So it's not uncommon, as you may know, for the USDA to declare a drought and open up assistance that's somewhat driven by rangeland issues, which are the first to emerge when we have extended dry conditions. So at the emergency services level, the governor has not declared a drought proclamation. At this point in time, we don't believe we need emergency powers at the state level to do the things that we need to be doing to manage through this year. If next year is very dry, we will absolutely be in an emergency drought proclamation, and you will see some of the things that we saw in the last drought with salinity barriers in the Delta and the need for temporary urgency change permits at the Water Board. But we don't believe we have that emergency now.
Later in her comments, she discussed drought resiliency as well. We have more on that as we continue the focus on water in segment 3. But our news brief is coming up next. We'll be right back.
This segment was sponsored by the California Walnut Board. Having problems with nematodes? ProMax is your number one solution. ProMax is a powerful fungicide and nematicide that works to kill and control nematodes and soil-borne disease. ProMax is a powerful and easy-to-use product in your fields. WaterRight Technologies is your source for this powerful solution. Visit WRTAG.com/ProMax for more information.
Here's your news brief for today. How has the recently passed Western snowpack season shaped what the region's water managers and irrigators could have regarding water supplies for the spring and summer? Rod Bain looks into it from the USDA perspective.
April 1st. While better known for its celebration of pranks and practical jokes, that date is also notable to many water managers, farmers, irrigators, and municipalities in the western U.S., as it is the traditional peak date of the Western Mountain snowpack season. It is then that regions of the West know what available water runoff will flow from melting snows into reservoirs and water storage systems. Yet, as USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey points out, in several parts of the West, The snowpack accumulations for this year might be the equivalent of an April Fool's joke.
I wish I were fooling about some of the numbers that are coming in from California, the Great Basin, and the Southwest, but the news is not good for those areas in terms of overall precipitation and snowpack for the Western winter wet season of 2021.
The six-month season produced only 18 inches of snowpack in the Sierra Nevada range of California and Nevada, compared to the average of 30 inches of snowpack annually.
And that is just 64% of the average peak that we would like to see across the Sierra Nevada.
Meaning likely water allocation cutbacks and water shortages.
Southern Oregon, southern Idaho, and then covering much of the Great Basin, Utah, western Colorado, and everywhere in Arizona and New Mexico, all coming up short.
Also in the two-third range of total snowpack accumulation. In fact,
we have seen some early meltdown in the Southwest, and that could erode the already meager snowpacks more quickly than usual and lead to additional concerns for water supplies in Arizona and New Mexico in particular.
Yet Rippey says the northern one-third of the West, along with the central Rockies, managed to fare much better regarding total mountain snowpack numbers.
In the best shape of anybody in the West, really the Northern Cascades. Early April snowpacks there, as much as 130 to 150 plus percent of average, as most of the precipitation in the Cascades has fallen in the form of snow. There hasn't been much melt, so there's a lot of snow still to melt off. And then we've had that late season surge in snowpack in much of Wyoming and eastern Colorado, really a big benefit to folks who depend on the water coming out of the central Rockies during the spring and summer.
I'm Rod Bain reporting for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
If you're planning to attend the Reading Rodeo next month, be prepared for some animal rights activists. Information provided by Protect the Harvest, a pro-animal agriculture group, found that from May 13th to May 15th, the group's Protest for Animal Rights and Rally Against Rodeo plan to stage a protest at the Reading Rodeo. Reports say the demonstrators intend to protest the rodeo over animal abuse concerns by holding signs and handing out leaflets. Attitudes about trade with Cuba have done a good many U-turns over the last half century. Here's Gary Crawford.
January 3rd, 1961.
It is my hope to find...
President Eisenhower's press secretary there, James Hagerty, announcing the U.S. is severing diplomatic relations with Cuba, followed by a trade embargo and the closing of the U.S. embassy there. 54 years later, President Obama's Secretary of State, John Kerry, announces...
We have begun a process of full normalization.
Trade restrictions were loosened.
But now, those days are over.
President Trump puts them back on again. So now there's a new administration. We asked Agriculture Secretary Tom Vilsack for his views on Cuba.
I would hope that as the administration gets its people in place and as it begins to look at other parts of the world, that they recognize that agriculture can be a good entree, if you will, a good first step into improved relations with Cuba in a way that makes sense.
He says he thinks U.S. agriculture sees Cuba as a potential market.
It's a market that certainly needs what we have to produce.
So we'll see what happens with U.S.-Cuba relations during the Biden administration. Gary Crawford for the U.S. Department of Agriculture.
Blueberry demand remains strong with American consumers, and Berry People, a year-round full-line shipper of branded organic and conventional strawberries, raspberries, blueberries, and blackberries, says there's lots of high-quality fruit available. In a release, Gerald Downs, the president of Berry People, said South American supply delays caused by weather, port clearance, and unloading delays caused by COVID-19 are behind us, and now we have a steady volume of great quality conventional and organic blueberries from Mexican growers. But he said their growers in California also report fruit set that looks promising for harvest toward the end of April. They say they anticipate a steady transition from Mexican to Californian produce over the next 60 days. The pace of corn planting is on par with the five-year average and last year. Stephanie Ho reports from the USDA.
USDA meteorologist Brad Rippey has the first crop progress report of the 2021 season.
As we move into what promises to be an exciting year, starting off with drought, with some wet areas
he has a look at corn planting.
Among the 18 major production states, we see some planting progress in five of them at this early stage. For the week ending April 4th, Texas, of course, leads the way, 55% of the intended corn acreage planted. That is ahead of the five-year average of 53% and pretty much on par with last year's number of 56%.
The other states reporting corn planting progress include Kansas, Missouri, North Carolina, and Tennessee.
Nationally, we see 2% of the corn planted by April 4th. That is right on par with the five-year average and last year's number. So nothing unusual in the early reports for corn planting.
This is Stephanie Ho for the U.S. Department of Agriculture in Washington, D.C.
That's your news brief for today. We get back to the water discussion right after this.
Agromiora Nursery is the premier nursery in California. Whether it's almonds, walnuts, pistachios, prunes, or olives, Agromiora has been the grower's source for over 20 years and is the home of Rootpack R almond, grizzly walnut, and the North American plants UCB1 and platinum clonal pistachio rootstocks. As the worldwide leader in super high-density almonds, olives, and prunes, Agromiora can show you how to cut costs and increase yields with their super high-density rootstock Rootpack 20. For more information or to schedule a site visit, contact a representative at 530-812-3398 today.
JCS Marketing is your number one way to connect with the ag industry. Through print magazines, digital media, podcasts, and live and virtual events, JCS Marketing has the reach to inform, educate, and influence growers in the Western United States.
Everywhere you go, you see West Coast Nut Magazine on every one of my customers' tables. So that tells you everything. It's there, so they're reading it.
Our My Ag Life platform includes podcast interviews and digital articles for busy professionals on the go. Our live events, continuing education webinars, and virtual conferences help growers connect with leading researchers and industry leaders. Let JCS Marketing help you connect.
The California Board of Food and Agriculture discussed water and climate at its meeting Tuesday. State Agriculture Secretary Karen Ross gave an update on the drought and the recent grower panels on climate change.
At conference 2 weeks ago, we did put out the information of some changes that would happen, as well as allocations on our drought conditions here in the state. USDA had actually, at the 1st of March, had issued a letter to the governor that they were declaring a drought disaster in 50 of our 58 counties, but a lot of the disaster assistance that's available through USDA Farm Services Program and other programs is also available to contiguous counties. So basically, almost every county in the state can qualify for USDA programs, and we're making that information available. We had started as an administration last fall, and really, in many ways, it started as we were building our water resiliency portfolio. We were capturing lessons learned in that and talked about the critical importance of early planning and concurrent planning for drought and for flood, which really forces us into looking at every water project, every water decision has to be multi-benefit and how we implement that. And so we've been working as an interagency team since last fall on being prepared for drought, doing really robust stakeholder engagement, and understanding that drought impacts are felt differently in a big, diverse state like ours. And so it's important that we not get locked into one size fits all kind of things on that. But I'm going to let Carla talk about that later. A couple of internal things we put out during the month of February, we hosted six different roundtables for farmer and rancher led solutions on climate change. This was part of the governor's executive order from last fall. And it was about climate and how do we achieve carbon neutrality in addition to improving our stewardship of the rich biodiversity that we have in California. California is one of those rich biodiverse spots in the world. We announced, you know, our goals to conserve 30% of the land and 30% of our coastal waters as a way of achieving the sustainability of our biodiversity, and we at CDFA have a specific role on that, especially for pollinators and soil health, which to many people's surprise, that's where a lot of our biodiversity is stored, in those first few inches of topsoil. We had really good participation in our roundtables, and we published a draft report, was put out a week and a half ago, and it is out for public comment until the end of April, April 30th. Looking forward to that. Just a few highlights. One is that a concern that was heard loud and clear at every one of the roundtables is the concern of agriculture being so regulated now that we not do things that lead to further mandatory regulations, that we have really good success rates with our voluntary practices, with incentive dollars, demonstration projects, and technical assistance. There was a strong emphasis from every corner of the state that first, let's conserve agricultural land and agricultural productivity, because avoiding development means we're avoiding vehicle miles traveled and even higher increases in greenhouse gas emissions. So looking forward to comments coming back on that. Interestingly enough, the week after we released that, USDA also put out a request for comments at the end of April on farmer and rancher-led climate solutions. So we're hoping to work across agency to be able to file comments on that. We've been working this month on BCPs and what the May revised budget will look like. It's no secret that there are one-time funds that may be available. Really looking at how that aligns with the governor's priorities on climate, supporting the agricultural community with a vote that was taken by the Air Resources Board at the first of the year to phase out ag burning in the Central Valley over the next 4 years. And so that's going to require some support and investment to the ag community for that one. Also this month, we've been working hard, and I'm really pleased to see how many events have been held, how many employers are hosting events to really improve the numbers of farm workers who have gotten vaccinated. We can't collect specific numbers because we don't ask for occupation when they register, but I can tell you it is significant, and it is the combination of working with local public health officials who were planning for this phase of vaccinations early on. The number of employers that have hosted either just for their employees on site or being willing to be a host for neighborhood employers to be able to host events, and the community-based organizations who have that trust in the community, English and cultural appropriate outreach to really ensure that people know about vaccinations, can have their questions answered about vaccinations, and that they can trust going to a government site for vaccinations or other sites has really helped us lead to a very successful outreach. And I think the governor will announce today what the breakdown is of total vaccinations that have been distributed and how many are in these hardest to reach communities. So a lot of good work that is happening there. I really want to call out Jenny, who's worked hard on Housing for the Harvest, also partnered with a number of her colleagues in the cabinet to really get these sites set up. And in the Central Valley in particular, a lot of collaboration was happening. The Community Foundation, the Central Valley Community Foundation there in Fresno, had an extensive list already put together, so people were ready to just turnkey this operation, and it's really been impressive. USDA has opened up yesterday on the 5th, they opened up the next round of assistance to farmers under the Coronavirus Food Assistance Program, based on a lot of evaluation and comments that they've gotten. There are a number of changes in the program, including specific outreach to specialty crop growers and to small historically underserved growers. They're also including in that $2 million that'll be available to organizations to provide specific technical assistance to underserved farmers being able to access these programs. So that round of funding will be available for 60 days. And hopefully California farmers and ranchers are taking a look at that and making applications in that. I want to close with Japanese beetle treatment started last week. I'm sure Mark and Andy will be talking a little bit about that. But I really want to commend our plant health division. They spent the last year working with a firm that helped the state of Oregon on public engagement and really reaching all communities in advance of doing treatment and really having good community outreach, stakeholder engagement. They've gone through a really robust process, and so far the treatment program has really started out going very, very, very smoothly. Japanese beetle is a horrific pest. We don't want it to be housed in this state. Again, this is another one of those eradication programs that we're running in Sacramento in a fairly intensely developed area of the Sacramento region. I also want to note that, again, our animal health division has done a great job. We had a low path avian influenza outbreak in birds in a live market in San Francisco, and they were able to go in and do the treatment on that one very successfully 2 weeks ago. They also have some equine problems and some rabbit issues that are going on, but they've got everything under control, and I'm really proud of the work that everyone's been able to do.
And as we talked about in segment one, California Department of Water Resources Director Carla Nemeth also gave comments during the meeting. Here are more of her comments on water.
We do know that, you know, emergency water supply conditions can happen in around certain geographies. So of course the Russian River is, you know, of great concern this year. They were drier last year than a lot of the state. They're drier this year. So it's possible that we'll have counties declare a state of emergency, and that can help state agencies do certain things that are in certain counties. And, you know, in the last drought, when we were actually reversing the emergency proclamation, we did have some counties like Santa Barbara and Kern that really lingered in emergency situations much longer. Some of that was hydrology driven, and some of that was local water supply driven. So that's where we are right now as it relates to emergency proclamations in the state. But we do anticipate establishing a tight group of administration officials who can get organized and do some cross-departmental planning around this, heading into this spring and summer. And I think increasingly important, what are we going to do if next year is dry? And we're going to want to be engaging with different stakeholder groups to really articulate our thinking, get some feedback around some of the planning that needs to be done to prepare us for another dry year. I always want to give a shout out to people who pick up the phone and call me when something is not working as well as it should at the department. And that's Bryce Lumberg. He and David Guy and some folks from the American River gave me a call last August and said, "Hey, Carla, you know, we really wish DWR, you're having a hard time getting through transfers this year, and maybe you can help the department take a closer look at that." And fortunately, we did that with some important input from all kinds of water users, buyers and sellers alike, and we put into place some important process improvements in the transfer program that is really serving us well this year. I think we're in process of north of 40 individual transfers, which is more than we've ever done. That's my understanding. So we're really moving water. That program is working well this year. And I frankly shudder to think if Bryce didn't pick up the phone and call me or, you know, say, "Hey, you need to pay attention here." You know, sometimes we get in our, you know, sort of more bureaucratic mindsets and we're not focused on the outcomes that we need. So those transfers have, I think, been a lot more transparent and better understood, and decisions have been made in a more timely way. So that's all for the good. And that's really coming into play this year. So big thanks to the ag water users who put that on my radar almost a year ago. I do think that our general approach is what we're working at both with DWR and the Water Board, I think, is really understanding, you know, the last the 2014-2015 era was such a shock to the system. We did a lot of never been done before drought management things with the 25% mandatory conservation in the urban world. A lot was going on. We obviously passed sustainable groundwater management. We have water use efficiency laws in California now, and we're kind of right in the middle of updating all of that. So, you know, if we had our druthers, maybe this drought would have happened 18 months, 24 months from now, but we are kind of midstream in all this kind of planning. And so you'll probably hear more messaging from the state that's leading us more into drought resilience. And our ideal is to be implementing all of those good things that we did. Shortening the ledger, the emergency side of the ledger, and growing the drought management side of the ledger. That's where we need to be as a state. We know these droughts are going to come. They're going to be deeper and longer. It really means we need to make investments so that we're moving water when it's dry. But fundamentally, you know, I think if we all had our druthers, we wouldn't need to get into drought emergencies, because ultimately we want to be in a place where we're implementing continuously so that when the time comes, you know, we can roll up our sleeves, we can do so with minimal disruption to all parts of our economy. Agriculture obviously is a huge part of that. Do better by species and ecosystems so that we can all become more drought resilient. We're definitely not there yet, but that is what we're starting to work through based on all the good work that was done in the last drought and all the important legislation that was passed in the last drought that we are now implementing.
Coming up, concerns over the California salmon industry and water management. We'll be right back.
Soil and Crop Incorporated is your number one resource for sustainable nutrition. Growers are faced with difficult challenges, and Soil and Crop Inc. has the experience, fertilizer, and biological portfolio to dramatically increase yield and performance in your troubled orchards and fields. Contact Soil and Crop Incorporated today for a free consultation on how we can help reverse the challenges you face as a conventional or organic grower so you can increase your bottom line and become a better sustainable farmer. Contact us today at 559-564-1236 or visit our website at www.callnrg.com. Soil and Crop, putting nature to work for you.
The State Water Resources Control Board is meeting today for the second day of its two-day April meeting. At Tuesday's meeting, several members of the public discussed their concerns about salmon and water management.
Hi, I'm John McManus. I'm the president of the Golden State Salmon Association. Most of you know me. We represent both sport and commercial salmon fishing interests, both on the coast and in inland waters. Couple of reports from the coast where I am this morning. It's overcast, about 50 degrees. But that's not why I'm here to report. We've got really restricted fishing seasons in the ocean that we're facing this year. And it's because of a low number of both Klamath and Sacramento River fish. And those low numbers are because of water management decisions in the interior part of California. It's not because of issues out in the ocean. It's because of how water is being managed inland. Our commercial members are in a pretty bad way, I think. People may have read or heard that they had a pretty poor crab season, which most rely on in addition to salmon. And now they're looking at an incredibly restricted salmon season. They may only get 40 days, if that, out on the water. That's being determined this week by the Pacific Fisheries Management Council. What concerns me and what I wanted to address is the National Marine Fisheries Service forecast looking at likely winter run mortality this year because of elevated water temperatures in the upper Sacramento River. Now, they're talking about temperatures that will kill eggs of winter run, perhaps as early as August, but certainly by September and October. And I think most of you remember what happened back in 2014 and 2015 when we saw this exact same scenario. In addition to wiping out winter run, those hot water temperatures also took out the fall run salmon that we rely on to make a living. So as far as we can see, the forecast suggests we're going to lose the fall run again this year. And it could not come at a worse time. Another thing I'd like to share is the sports salmon fishing season opened last weekend from Pigeon Point in southern San Mateo County, south to the Mexican border. And a surprising thing happened. Some of the boats went down from Half Moon Bay. It's about 23 miles down to the boundary line where they were allowed to fish. And they found a bunch of salmon. I mean, they found a bunch of salmon. So at a time that we're looking at bad things on the horizon, we have a glimpse of hope out in the ocean of some salmon. We're not going to catch them all. A bunch of them will come back into the Central Valley this summer and into the fall. And what we don't want to see is for them to die. So I wanted to ask you, the board, since you're the only authority that we're aware of in California that can do something about this, to take action to keep these hot water temperatures in the late summer and the fall from occurring in the upper Sacramento. I would posit that there's a reasonable use of a public trust to be considered here. We basically have lost the Delta smelt because of water operations. We don't want to lose any more species. And Chair Esquivel, I noticed yesterday that Pete Buttigieg tweeted, or actually made an address in which he said, you need water to live. And I noticed that you tweeted here. Completely agree. And we need water to live too. And so does the natural wildlife in our Central Valley system. So that's my comment. I'm asking you to act to avoid these hot water temperatures this fall. And I hope you make yourselves available to hear from others in the salmon community who may have lined up to comment this morning. Thank you.
Board Chair Joaquin Esquivel had this response.
Thank you, Mr. McManus. Really do appreciate you coming to address the board. And yes, we will hear from others this morning and look forward to hearing their voices. I'll note, you know, that as you well know, the board requires a Sacramento River temperature management plan from the Central Valley Project as part of their water right. It is something that we went back and forth a bit with them last year. We've continued to have really good dialogue and conversation. It doesn't, you know, the circumstances are very difficult out there, certainly, and it is, we see, particularly in dry years, that the projects, going back to the last drought, have challenges in meeting a number of requirements and you know, including what are folks that depend, obviously, on the projects for water. But nonetheless, what we need to see is better decision-making writ large, exploring options, and trying to just figure out how we can best all collectively manage through what are very difficult circumstances in the watershed. It hasn't been noticed yet this week, but it will be later this week. We will be holding a workshop actually on April 21st to explore Sacramento River temperature management issues with our colleagues on the federal side, both on the fisheries side and on reclamation's side, to explore the challenges that we see in the watersheds. To your point, it is a serious condition we find ourselves with when it comes to just how dry it was last year, how dry it's been this year, and project impacts therein. And so we want to explore, we want to be able to understand and help contribute to what is just, you know, difficult decision-making amongst us all, certainly. And it includes not just the projects, but all of us here in the state as we navigate through dry conditions. So we're concerned as well. We appreciate your shared concern and know that we've been working for the last weeks and months and really over the last year plus to try to, you know, better have an understanding with reclamation of the challenges that they face, but also maybe the options that may be on the table with all of our partners involved. And so look forward to a very public discussion there. I won't be saying too much more and instead be listening to the comments here moving forward, but we just flag that there is a more public and formal discussion that we'll be having around Sacramento River temperature management and the challenges we have therein here on the 21st.
Dick Poole also gave comments.
Chairman Esquivel and board members, thank you for allowing me to say a few words about the Central Valley salmon. My name is Dick Poole. I'm on the board of directors of the Golden Gate Salmon Association. I am president of Water for Fish, and my company, ProTroll, is one of the largest producers of salmon fishing equipment in North America. As some of you know, I've been working on salmon issues for over 30 years. As we all know, the Central Valley salmon populations are now near another all-time low. They can be recovered, but we need your help. I have three current asks of you, following what John McManus said. Number one, fix the Shasta-Keswick flows such that we don't have lethal temperatures when the winter and fall run are present in the upper Sacramento River. Number two, manage the upriver flows such that the fall run eggs that are deposited in September and early October along the edges of the Sacramento River are not left high and dry when the flows are cut in late October and November. That's happened year after year, and we lose huge numbers of fish. Number three, finish the Bay Delta plan, provide a better balance for all of the beneficial water users, including the salmon. Thank you very much.
California resident Michael Frost had this about fish versus agricultural water use.
Yeah, I grew up in California as well. Been fishing my entire life. And, you know, I want to step back a little bit because the environmental apocalypse that we're in right now is obvious. You know, the entire western half of the U.S. was on fire last year. The entire continent of Australia, you know, we are at the inflection points right now that we may not be able to get past. And wild salmon are a wonderful connection between the marine environment and the freshwater environment. And there used to be 6 million salmon swimming through the bay and through the delta every single year. We're now in the low hundreds of thousands. We don't understand the cost of these extinctions. And the previous speakers talked about the mismanagement of flows. You know, the salmon need cold water, and they need cold water at certain particular times. You know, where are the priorities in the state? Where does this board stand up for public trust resources? Cold water, native fish, those are public trust resources. Almonds, alfalfa, cotton grown in the semi-arid desert, those are not public trust resources. Those are a drain on public trust resources. We're at the inflection point of extinction. We don't understand the cost of salmon going extinct forever. Fish are a leading indicator of the health of a region. If the native fish go extinct, we humans, as part of the food chain, are next on the extinction train. This is not a joke. And a lot of reasons why things are done, I find that it's just money is the reason. Money. That's why. Well, with salmon go extinct, the entire state is on fire. You know, a truckload of money won't do us any good. And we need to be really, really careful right now. Some of the sportsmen, some of the fishermen think there's some conspiracy within the state to starve the fish of water at the particular time, dry out the eggs, make the salmon small die on the shore. You know, they think it's purposeful mismanagement. And that doesn't seem unreasonable to me when you look at it. You know, mismanaging the flows so badly right when the fish need the water. Like, we all know how this works. Please help us protect public trust resources and put a priority on the native wildlife. Also, fire mitigation as well.
We will continue monitoring this issue, and we will monitor the meeting that happens later this month. That's our show for today. If you know of a topic or a person we should feature, send me an email to sabrina@myaglife.com. This has been the My Ag Life Daily News Report. I'm Sabrina Halverson from the JCS Marketing Team. Thanks for listening.